Is Rick Speck at FOSDEM at 2020. Simon, he's also in the room, and Christian introduced the Eclipse IceOryx project for the first time. Today it's my pleasure to introduce IceOryx 2 and to elaborate on how it can help you with relieving some pain. You always have middleware, and I saw over and over again the last 20 years of middleware development. I will start with a high-level overview of what Eclipse IceOryx is, and then I will deep dive into four specific pain points and how IceOryx relieves them, and I will end up with some community insights. So IceOryx is an open source project hosted by the Eclipse Foundation, started in 2019, and in 2023 we started IceOryx 2 as the second generation. And if we combine the whole contribution work of all the committers over roughly 10 years, it's about of more than 70 years of shared experience in developing high-performance inter-process communication. This is how it works on a high level. IceOryx creates shared memory, maps it into the processes where we have senders and receivers. This allows a sender to directly write into the shared memory, a receiver to directly read from the shared memory. IceOryx then provides the whole communication infrastructure around it, so entities for sending, receiving data, discovery, connecting them, exchanging the data, which is actually just passing reference of, to the messages, the whole management of memory around it, memory synchronization, and so on. This allows you to pass a message without a single copy. We also call this true zero-copy communication. IceOryx 2 already surpasses the first generation, which we also call IceOryx Classic now. It's written in Rust, runs already on a bunch of operating systems, Linux, Windows, macOS, QNX. It runs even bare metal. And besides the Rust APIs, we also have already language bindings for C, C++, Python, and also now C#. It has different messaging patterns, the many-to-many publish-subscribe communication, internet-style request-response, and also our key value storage in shared memory, which we call Blackboard. And in addition, an event mechanism that allows you to wake up a receiver that's waiting for data. It's developed for mission critical systems in mind, and does no heap allocation during runtime, no blocking calls, and also does not have a dependency on the Rust standard library. Compared to the IceOryx Classic version, we have no more central daemon, so fully decentralized, and the next step towards a mixed criticality architecture. Okay, so it's an IPC middleware. What else? Yeah, it's a solid foundation to avoid some of the hard pain points that you often have with middleware. The first and most obvious one is the pain you have with copies and serialization inside your middleware. So if you copy a message, this takes CPU cycles, and sure, the bigger the message, the more CPU cycles. And advanced robotic systems can have gigabytes or even tens of gigabytes of data you have to pass between processes and threads of execution. Consequence is that you have high latency and high CPU load. Here on this figure, we see how the latency increases with the message size for the IPC mechanisms that typically are used with Linux, so message queue and Unix domain socket. Here, a real-life system where IceOryx is used. It's autonomous driving based on an end-to-end AI model. And we have six high-resolution cameras with roughly 5 megabytes per frame, 20 frames per second. So this gives you a camera data stream of already more than 4 gigabytes that you have to pass to your inference process. Now think about, you have to copy them on the sender side. You have to copy them on the receiver side. Then you maybe want to record the data, so you have the next process and the next copies. So it's quite easy to end up with 10 to 20 gigabytes per second just for this small subset of your system. What IceOryx does is this true zero-copy IPC. We are just passing references to the messages. This gives you a constant sub-microsecond latency independent of the message size. Here we see the measurement on a Raspberry Pi, which is not the most powerful hardware, but even there, our latency is below 1 microsecond. if the messages are small, it's not that much of a difference, but you have megabyte messages, we are talking about sub-microsecond and not below milliseconds. So a factor from more than 1,000 faster in the end. So this enables dozens of gigabyte per second IPC without CPU load, and also a fast reaction time, so it reduces the latency from sensing to acting. And in the end, with the CPU time you save, you can use smaller, cheaper CPU for the same workload, which can be crucial if you want to go embedded. So if you have a pre-development on a RUC PC and then have to go embedded, this is really one important point to not end up with getting crazy. On the other way around, you could also say the CPU time you save can be used for more workload. The next pain point are additional threads inside your middleware. So many middleware solutions come with background threads for discovery, housekeeping, and so on. But the question is, when do these threads wake up and what are they doing? And if you want to tweak your real-time settings, how can I configure these threads that are somewhere nested deep inside your middleware? The worst case is that additional threads are involved in passing the message. This means you have one or even more context switches with every message you send. One context switch is not that expensive, but if you have thousands of messages per second, you will end up in thousands of additional context switches per message. Consequence of all this is it's not deterministic, and you have a high scheduling overhead. Here's an example from a measurement we got with IceOS Classic. A user reported that they have some strange latency spikes in a loaded real-time system. And it was even a funny pattern, and we started analyzing and then realized these latency spikes were coming from interference with a monitoring thread we had that sent a keep alive message over a Unix domain socket. The easiest communication would be I have a node A sending a message to node B. The most efficient execution would be I run these two nodes after another in the same thread of execution. So first node A runs, sends a message, then node B runs, consumes the message. If you have additional threads involved in this message passing, it's not clear if you will see this message. Kind of, that's a classical race condition here. IceRx2 has no internal threads, so nothing happens behind the scenes, and all the housekeeping we have to do is done when we create or destroy the entities. What this enables is, together with this zero copy communication, low latency with low jitter. And it's deterministic, so this passing of messages along a thread of execution will always have the message when the receiver's running, and in the end we reduce the whole scheduling overhead, which means lower CPU usage. Here on the figure you see what happened when we disabled this monitoring thread, and we had the stable latency compared to the first version where we have the interference with the thread in the middle. The next pain point is an improper queuing inside your middleware. There are middleware solutions, especially around shared memory, where you have no queuing at all, which means a sender can outpace the receiver and override messages that are not read. If you have queues, you have to face the challenge of a queue overflow. Often what you do is then either block the sender, wait for the receiver to consume the messages, or you return an error and drop the new message because you cannot push into a full queue. Another thing is historical messages. If you have a sender that's only sporadically sending some data, like some state update, you want to have receivers connecting to it and getting the latest state. But if the late joining receiver is started after the sender and you have no historical data, it won't get a message, so no data. In this case, you have to ensure that your startup order ensures that all the receivers are first started and then the sender, which is kind of a restriction you have. So consequences here is that you can have back pressure from the receiver to the sender side, or the other way around, you have a receiver that's forced to keep pace with the sender to not lose any messages. Here an example where I have a low frequency, low priority consumer that wants to read always the latest four messages from a high frequency, high priority producer. That's actually a use case I had when I was working on engine control system. I had this low frequency, low priority consumer that wanted to do some calculations on a full engine cycle, which had fewer combustions, and I had for every combustion the message, and I wanted to have the full cycle with all of the four latest messages. As there was no queuing, I had to do some workaround and have some intermediate node that starts caching these messages internally and then sends one message with all the four messages collected from this high frequency sender. But that's kind of an ugly workaround. Better is to have queues. But if you have queues, you could have a queue overflow. In this example here, we have now a receiver which has a queue of four, but the receiver gets delayed. So your high frequency, high priority publisher wants to provide new data. And depending on your use case, you have different options, but often many of them are also not really good options. So you could block the sender, which we do not want to do in this case because I have a high priority sender and I don't want to get it disturbed by a low frequency, low priority consumer. You could return an error and whatever, shut down the whole system, which we also do not want. We don't want to have trouble with a low priority receiver here. But we also don't want to let this receiver processing old data. So it would be good to really have four consecutive latest messages here. What IceRx2 provides is receiver queues with configurable queue size. And we have something what we call safely overflowing queues, which is more or less just a ring buffer. But it has the benefit that you can drop old messages that are unread and in favor of new ones. So in case of an overflow, you can always provide the latest N messages to the receiver. In the end, we can configure this queue overflow behavior. So we have the possibilities to either return an error and drop the new message. We can block the sender, wait for the receiver, or we can do this overflow that I just described and drop the oldest messages. What we also provide is a history option on the sender side, so we can there store the historical messages, and if you have a late joining receiver, we can deliver this message on subscription, you could say. So this enables a decoupling of senders and receivers, and also to have a very efficient memory queuing of only the messages that are relevant, and you can drop messages that are no more of interest. In this example here, we have a fusion node. It has different senders with different frequencies. You could decide that for your LiDAR sender, you're only interested in latest greatest, so queue size one. For your camera sender, you want to have up to the four latest camera images, but if they are getting older, they are no more interesting, so you could overflow. If you have a sender with a certain state, you can subscribe and get the history or the latest message on the sender side still available. Or you could also decide that I don't want to miss a message, I go for the maximum queue size, and then queue overflow is an error. The last pain point are message callbacks, or let's say per message callbacks, and this is typically the pattern that also Ross is using, and it makes you trouble because this is a hard coupling between communication and execution. So your business logic on the receiver side is forced to react on every message. And there are use cases where this is perfectly fine. But if you want to process several messages from several receivers simultaneously, you have to do some bookkeeping and do some caching beyond these callbacks to come to the right set of messages you want to have. It even gets worse if the message only lives during the callback duration, which means you have to copy the content of the message out of this callback for later processing. Here we end up with many context switches, which is more scheduling overhead again, and also more administrative effort on your side. If we stay with this fusion example, we have the different senders with different frequencies. Now your fusion algorithm could work like, I always want to process the whole messages from different sensors when there's a new LiDAR scan. So that's my leading sensor, and whenever I get a new LiDAR scan, I want to get the messages from the other sensors and throw them in one algorithm that does the calculation. In this simple example, this would mean you have 16 individual callbacks to just execute one fusion run. I try to have it here depicted on the timeline in the figure, and sorry, it's a bit messy, but if you have callbacks per message, things get a bit messy. What Isorix 2 provides is a totally decoupling of this notification and the related context switching from the act of messaging. We have event as a separate pattern, comes with notifiers, listeners, and wait sets. Notifier can send an event, listener can wait on an event, and with a wait set you can wait on many events in a single thread. This then can easily combine again with the publishers, subscribers, and clients and servers and so on. So it's easy to build a triggering publisher that always wakes up a receiver when sending data, or you can also have your per message callback again if you really like it. If you now bring this together, the queuing and this event mechanism, you can have very efficient execution strategies. So in our fusion example, I could say, okay, whenever a LiDAR message is sent, I also have a notification and I wake up the fusion node. All the other messages from all the other senders are queued behind the scenes with the queue size you configured. And yeah, here you have one context switch if you want to run the fusion, and the other queuing just happens behind the scenes. It's also possible to use our event mechanism for whatever notification you have. So you could use it for timers, for instance, and say, I have a wait set that's waiting on new data or on a timer to expire. So again here, less context switching and more CPU time for your application. Coming to some community insights, IceOrix 2 is already used in many different domains. It's used in automotive, from simulators up to automated driving, all kinds of robots. It's used for high frequency trading, on industrial cameras. We have different medical devices up to surgical robots, drones. So wherever you have a need for low latency and high volume data transfer. So you can think of Isorix as being a low-level basic software for shared memory communication that can now be combined with other open source projects to build something bigger. So you can combine it with a network protocol to have a full-blown communication stack with internal and external communication. So for instance, Xeno or gRPC, something like that. You could also integrate it as an IPC layer in a broader communication stack, maybe based on a standard like DDS, which then defines a data model and an IDL and so on. IceOrix.
Thank you. So I was wondering, since you don't copy the data, it means that I can only read it. I cannot write into that pointer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I need to make a copy myself. If I want to modify the data.
Okay. Yeah, there's this use case which we call the read, modify, write pipeline. With the current API, that's not possible. It could be a special option to also allow this. We know this use case for a while.
No, I think it's interesting if that is how it works.
But yeah, if you have kind of a special contract, so sure, you would have to ensure that that's the only receiver of the data if you start writing it and so on. No.
We'll just put this with microphone so it's good to talk to this one.
Hi. I was wondering about the Blackboard mechanism. So does that keep a history of all the messages that have been submitted, or is that just the latest messages? Because I know that Blackboards can be really good for reproducible logging of when messages were sent.
Yeah. The Blackboard is actually one thing where we might have a copy. So we check if there's some contention on the Blackboard. You can update, and if someone is reading, it could mean that you have another read again because someone was writing time and have a key value store there.
Thanks.
Thank you. If I'm doing zero copy IPC, does it mean that I need to pre-allocate my memory pool for all of my messages?
So this is all what we do behind the scenes. So if you configure your services, you can configure how many, for instance, publishers and subscribers are there. You also configure your queue sizes. And with these values, we can kind of calculate the worst case amount of memory you need. In the current version of Iceworks 2, it's a bit of kind of the maximum memory. So it could be that it's the theoretical maximum, but in practice, you don't need it. We will soon have the option for you to configure it individually. If you want to have a safety system, you can then configure it beforehand. In the current happy hacking version, I would say, if we would run out of memory, we just allocate more memory behind the scenes, so things are going on. So that's also kind of smoother than in Iceworks 1, where you really had to configure all the settings.
Do you have any industrial clients? And the reason I'm asking is I wanted to see if you had ever integrated it with EtherCAT or Profinet for industrial use, which is a highly deterministic environment.
No.
And how was it?
Yeah. So far, we had no contact with guys who are kind of combining it with EtherCAT or whatever
the Modbus
deterministic
the,
Ethernet stuff. Yeah. But for sure, how we typically do this, we have gateways, and the gateway is grabbing data from shared memory and then sending it on the wire or whatever. And you could then have whatever a strict cycle time in which your gateway is running and then consumes without queuing the latest greatest message and sends it over Ethernet.
Do you support dynamically sized messages, or do you need to set up a maximum size, or how does that work?
That's still the limitation. So data lives in shared memory. So if you have data that's based on heap allocation, your heap is processed local, that won't work. So if you have your own special versions of vectors and so on with your own allocator, you could say, okay, I have an allocator that's allocating in shared memory. And then you can also realize that.